Welcome to the Dope Science Show. My goal is to change the narrative around science. We need to hear and see more diversity in science. I want to take the elitism out of science. Science is about exploring and finding keys to creating the very fabric of our lives. So let's be more curious and engaged. Let's empower ourselves and create endless opportunities. My contribution is to tell stories about anything and everything in between. Learn something new. Be random and have fun, because after all, we can all be dope scientists. This is episode 1. Excuse the voice, I was sick. More importantly, I share a conversation with my friend Robert about growing up awkward, politics, and music. If you had to pick who was the best, Prince or Michael Jackson, who would you pick? Hard question. And finally, just a touch of science and geek culture. Some shows will have more science talk, and some will have less. I'm just going to go with the flow. Thank you for coming along as I learn along the way. Please subscribe on SoundCloud, iTunes, and everywhere else. Links will be in the description. It would mean a lot if you could take the time to comment or share or do both so I can reach and connect with more people. More people, more stories, and more dope science. Thank you for listening. Let's start the show. I keep a picture beside my bed. So this is my friend Robert. He's my very first guest. Thank you, Robert.
Anytime, no problem.
Yeah, I know Robert because he's one of those cool people you are friends with on Facebook, but you never talk to or see in person. But you like really vibe with them, and maybe you chat at that point. So I just thought that it would be cool to talk to some of the people I follow online and share that with my audience, and just awesome people, and you're one of them. So I appreciate you coming on the show and letting me get to know you a little bit better. And the other day we were talking about who was more the genius. Is that what we're saying? What were we saying?
I think I was trying to allude to who was maybe inherently more talented, but then I thought more about that, and it didn't really seem entirely fair. I think it's kind of like trying to pick your favorite child, although from what I hear from a lot of parents who have many children, they do secretly have a favorite child.
I know, it's horrible. I only have one, so it makes it easier.
And I have none, so it's not an issue for me, but... I guess what I was really trying to get to was which artists had the most impact, I guess, overall. I think as a child, I mean, we were kids, you know, raised in the 80s for the most part, into the 90s. Michael Jackson always seemed present I would say more so than Prince in a lot of ways. I think that's because perhaps Michael had a more universal appeal. And this is, you know, prior to like all the controversies that befell him in the early 90s, moving, you know, to his death. But when it came to Prince, I don't know, there was always like this enigmatic air to him. And he always seemed to be, I mean, relatively free of controversy in terms of, I guess, who he was, how he lived his life. He
Which is so
away
funny.
From the limelight.
It's so funny you say that because, like, Prince was super controversial as far as being considered edgy, you know, like talking about sex and everything. Even though he had that persona, he managed to, like, stay out of any real-life controversy,
yeah,
you know?
I feel like the biggest controversy he had was when he changed his name to that unpronounceable symbol because he was having a conflict, I believe it was with, was it Columbia Records? Sony, maybe? I don't know. But, oddly enough, Michael Jackson also had kind of a falling out with his record company, I want to say around the same time. But his was a lot more, dare I say, cartoonish and kind of sad. But I think Prince just strove for his independence and to allow to be, you know, fully and completely expressive on his own terms without kind of the restrictions that a record contract, you know, has on an artist. But with Michael, I don't know.
I definitely think for Prince, it was funny because when it happened, I was a kid. I don't remember how old I was, but I remember people thought he was so, like, full of himself or funny or just weird for doing that. You know, like, people didn't get it. It was just, like, the joke, you know, the artist formerly known as Prince, you know, like, or at least that's what it felt like mass media, how they portrayed it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what, you know, his real fans, what they were saying. I mean, I was a child. So for me, I felt like I was always a fan of Prince. He was always someone I actually had, like, a huge crush on. You know, I was like, oh, he's so sexy. And you know, I remember being, like, 8, and he did that performance. I think it was the Grammys, maybe MTV Awards. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they had awards back then. But,
he
was wearing yellow, and he had, like, the, you know.
The butt cheek outfit?
Yes, I'll never forget that, being, like, blown away, but at the same time being like, oh, he's hot. And I was, like, 8, and I remember I said something about that, and my mom told her friend, and I was so humiliated. I was like, oh.
Well, I mean, and that was kind of the cool thing about Prince, is he had no problem kind of, you know, defying convention and challenging, certainly challenging the notion of, like, male sexuality and masculinity on the whole. And then, you know, comparing that to Michael Jackson seemed always so completely just devoid of sexuality, even when, you know, like, there was that one video he did with, I think it was Remember the Time, Eddie Murphy was in the video, because back in the early 90s, if you remember, for some damn reason, every single artist that was popular at the time had to put out, like, a 10 to 15 minute music video. I mean, he did it, Guns N' Roses did it, MC Hammer did it. There was, like, these long, epic videos. Many of them were just completely self-flating and, like, but he did one with where it was, like, this Egyptian-themed.
It was awesome.
It was a great video, but there was one scene when he kisses, again, I think it was Iman.
I'll just say, don't talk shit.
But no, the video's great, song's great. You know, everyone, I mean, I think Tiny Lister played a guard in the video.
That is one of the most epic videos because everyone who was anyone who was black was, like, in that video.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, like, awesome. It's still awesome.
But there's a scene where he kisses Iman.
Yeah.
And it was just the most awkward kiss. Like, but I mean, aside from that, there was also when he was married to Lisa Marie Presley.
Oh, yeah, that was so awkward.
And they were at some, I think it was also the MTV Music Awards, and, you know, they come out on stage, and he's all like, people thought this wasn't going to last. Then he, like, you know, old Hollywood style, kind of, like, tips her over, like a dance move, and kisses her strongly. But again, it was just the most, like, uncomfortable, like, staged, just completely lacking of, like, sexuality. It was just...
Okay, so we say that, and we know Michael's awkwardness and all the controversy. Sure. Do you feel like his music reflected, that was the difference between him and Prince? Like, do you feel like Prince's music was more expressive and Michael's was more repressed? Do you know what I mean? Do you feel like their difference in personalities is reflected in their music, and that's why you feel maybe is more genius over the other, or you know what I mean? Like, what leads you to prefer, if you had to pick one over the other?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Prince was definitely more viscerally expressive with his art. I don't think that he felt he could do otherwise. I think that, you know, given Michael's upbringing, everything we know about it now and everything we've known about it since, you know, the Jackson 5 and, like, his horrible father, I mean, look at a lot of his other siblings. They grew up to be pretty screwed up people too. Like, I think Janet is probably the only one that got out okay. But
yeah, Janet's awesome. Okay, well, I think when we first talked about this, I felt my heart say Michael, just because I felt as a kid I related to Michael more. You know, I never saw him as cute, you know, like, or sexy, like I felt with Prince, but I wanted to be Michael's friend, you know. Like, I wanted to hang out with Michael.
No, that was,
you know,
appeal. I mean, I think that he really tried to, again, before, like, all the controversy befell him in, like, the early 90s, was genuinely trying to unite the world with his music and just with love. I think Prince's approach was different. I can't exactly say what I think Prince was trying to do as an artist, other than just be expressive and just have people be free and also be expressive within themselves. But I don't think that his mission as an artist was necessarily to unite the world with love and compassion and understanding. I mean, I could be reading into that wrong, but I think just comparing the two of them, I mean, you know, you always follow old videos of, like, Michael Jackson, like, running through the streets, of, like, you know, surrounded by children. You see the movie Moonwalker, like...
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah, he turns into a giant robot, he's fighting Joe Pesci, and he's, like, got a gang of, like, Goonie-style kids with him, and, like, yeah, and then, you know, Captain EO, I mean, which was at Disneyland, and, of course, they took that away because of the controversy, and then they put it back after he died, but he, I think, really was interested in and in entertaining a broad range of people, but especially children. That's probably because his whole childhood was, as we all know now, pretty much robbed from him. I mean, Joe was the hardest on him, allegedly. Well, I think it's not so much allegedly anymore. I think we know that Joe was the hardest on Michael out of all the brothers. They seem to be allowed to do pretty much what they wanted to do for the most part, but, you know, since Michael was the star, he was the one that got, you know, kind of the, you know, the short end of the stick, so to speak.
Okay, I think I agree, definitely. And my first instinct was, you know, Michael. But in hindsight, after I said that, I was like, you know what? As an adult, I relate more to Prince, and I feel like I'd rather be like Prince, because he was actually free, and he lived free, and he died free, and, you know, that's just, you know, the type of person in life I'd like to live. But
if you related to Prince as a child, then you were a very advanced child.
Right? But as an adult, I'm like, oh, I get it. Yeah. But speaking of that, you know, people said they both had another controversy in regards to people felt like Prince, when he first came out, black people felt like Prince was playing white music. Like, they, you know, he was playing in their... They didn't feel like he fit into whatever the R&B feel was at the time, you know?
Yeah, and I've followed him for years, too.
Exactly. And we were talking about that, and that led us to another point where you were talking about, you know, just how it is being, you're not black, you're Mexican with, like, some black or something like that, but you were talking about how...
Like 157, basically.
What?
I have, like, a wide arrangement of herbs and spices, basically.
But for some people, people thought you were like mixed with black or something, right? Well, yeah. Isn't that what you were saying?
I mean, I grew up, you know, in a Mexican American household. My mom was raised in the South, so during the 1960s. So, because my grandfather was stationed over there, you know, was in the Marine Corps, and so back in the 60s in the South, I mean, they didn't know what the hell a Mexican was, so everyone assumed they were Italian. So from an early, I mean, even before I was born, there was kind of an unawareness of, like, cultural identity. And then growing up, you know, I had, you know, really kinky, you know, hair. So naturally people assumed that I was, you know, mixed, like mulatto, like half black, half white. That was always the biggest assumption. And so from the onset, like going into like junior high, when you're trying to, you know, figure out who you are, like where you fit in the world, I really had no idea. I was
all based on your looks versus like anything else.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's, I mean,
that is so weird. I can't even imagine.
So superficial,
like,
though. I mean, you have to remember that kids thinking, are superficial.
Yeah, but I just can't imagine people thinking, for instance, like, say I was really light-skinned, but no one really talked about how I got light-skinned, and everybody, like, treated me bad, and they're like, you're white. And I'm like, no, but I'm black, because, see, everybody around me is black. You know?
The force, it's got a lot of power, and it makes me feel like it makes me feel like
you're back again after our cool break.
Here I am.
Okay, so you were saying with your dad, I forgot what you were saying. I'm sorry.
I mean, pretty much from the beginning, especially in junior high, you know, kids were, they looked at me as some kind of like racial and cultural oddity. You know, and that raised a lot of questions about my parentage, especially my father. My mother obviously was always around, but, you know, it led me to really start to question myself and my place in the world and realizing just how much I didn't fit in with a lot of the other kids that I grew up with. You know, 'cause I always grew up in rather, you know, poorish neighborhoods that were mostly, filled with people of color, you know, a few, you know, poor white kids here and there, but mostly people of color, you know, blacks, Latinos, et cetera. But so I didn't really feel like I fit in anywhere, to be honest with you. And like, even with everything that was popular at the time, it didn't really appeal to me. It didn't speak to me. And it wasn't until I kind of accidentally stumbled upon like punk rock music that I finally was like, wow, okay, something gets me. Like, and I think a lot of it was based on anger, and frustration that I was feeling towards, you know, not having a father around and other kids trying to, you know, immediately pick me apart and analyze me and try to assess who I was. So yeah, I had like this natural affinity towards music that
what was it? What was your first like punk band that really caught your attention or made you realize like, oh, I like this?
Was,
do you remember?
It was Black Flag.
Black Flag.
Yeah. You know, they were a band from Redondo Beach. I believe they formed in 78, and they've had many, many incarnations. They didn't last that long, about like less than a decade. And I just kind of stumbled upon them. Actually, what happened was an old neighbor of mine was cleaning out his garage, and I guess his niece had been living with them, and she had a box of cassette tapes. And he's like, hey, if you want these, you know, you can have them, or else I'm going to throw them away. And I'm like, okay, I'll check them out. This is like 92 or so. And so I take like this, almost like a shoebox size box of cassette tapes up to my room, and I kind of go through them like, I've heard of some of these groups, you know, like The Cure and like Echo and the Bunnymen, a lot of like sad British music, and which I like a lot of it now, but at the time it just didn't speak to me. But when I found,
I'm gonna have to listen to them. I just wiki'd it. Like what? I love it. Go ahead.
Yeah, but there was two tapes. The first 4 years, which was a collection of B sides, and then Live 84. Which was, of course, a live recording they did, I believe, up in San Francisco. And that was the last lineup that Black Flag had with Henry Rollins as a lead singer.
And it's funny you say that because I know of Henry Rollins. I've,
a permanent pop culture fixture now. Like,
yeah, and I went to, like, this talk. You know how he does, like, podcasts and stuff?
Yeah,
vocal
word tours, yeah.
I went to this talk that he did at the Grammy Music Museum in L.A., and that was the first time that I, like, really sat down and paid attention to him. And I was like, oh, super cool. Yeah, I don't know much about punk, so I knew that he was in a band, but I didn't know it was this band.
Yeah, actually, before Black Flag, he was in a band called State of Alert out of D.C., and I think he was just a big fan of Black Flag, and through some weird networking, somehow ended up being their lead singer. I mean, the story's actually a lot of that, but, and this, you know, pre-internet, like, they just had phones and snail mail. But again, the story is, it's long, and we don't have enough time to go into that, but that was, like, the first band that I really got into. And then, you know, I started running with some kids that hung out at the mall all the time, and other kids that were.
You mentioned that at first you tried to like be into New Jack Swing.
Yeah, like, it was really, really popular at the time, and
which I am a big fan of.
I like it more now than, I mean, and unironically, I like it more now than I did then. It just didn't do anything for me.
Who was like New Jack Swing? Is that Boyz II Men? Belle Biv DeVoe. I love it. Now I say I love it, but I haven't gone to like the reunion tours or anything
Watch the movie New Jack City. Listen to the soundtrack.
Like, I know. Awesome. On,
you know, I don't know. It was. I mean, again, I like it a lot more now than I did then. But as a 12-year-old angry kid who felt abandoned.
Wasn't angry enough for you.
No, not angry at all. It was all very sexy. Yeah. Like, so.
I know.
I didn't have any time for a little bump and grind. You know, I just wanted to.
Yeah, I just want to fit in somewhere.
Yeah,
and have friends.
And I did. Like, you know, I started hanging out with these kids at the mall, like going to shows. And contrary to what most people think, you know, punk rock isn't like an inherently white thing. In fact, the majority of kids that I knew that I hung out with, you know, there were, you know, Filipino kids, there were some black kids.
Yay, Afropunk.
Yeah, and these were all kids that probably felt the same way that I did. Like, you know, this just doesn't appeal to me, you know, and I don't want a box fade haircut. Like, you know, there's something rotten in the world and something rotten in my life, and I have legitimate gripes and legitimate reasons to rebel. And so, yeah, we all kind of came together in like this kind of tight knit group of people.
That's awesome. You know about the Afropunk movement, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to do a segment called Quest for Afropunk, where I'm going to play, like, punk bands that are part of that, you know, basically that culture, that whole movement. And I'll play some Black Flag now, too. Because now I'm like, oh, what song do you, what's one of your favorite songs from them?
Oh, man. That's rough.
I'm like, I'm going to take notes.
Well, I remember the first song I remember hearing was Nervous Breakdown. And that was with their first lead singer, Keith Morris. But the stuff that I liked the most, I think, was when Rollins was in the band. That's when they became a lot more kind of introspective and almost... almost metal-like, which I think that was much to the chagrin of a lot of the punk kids. But and they did, like, crazy, weird, like... I mean, I'm not a musician, but there was some, like, jazz elements going on there. And their later stuff, especially. I think the entire album, My War, is pretty good. If I had to pick one song... probably Wound Up is pretty good. Again, the whole album is great. Actually, Wound Up was on another album. My bad. They have a lot. They have a really large music catalog. I'd say Wound Up's pretty good. Let's see what else.
I'm definitely going to include some of these.
I mean, you've heard Bad Brains, right?
I've heard nothing, so I'm, like, brand new.
Oh, well, I'll have to make you a... I don't know, do kids still make cassettes nowadays? I'll just...
I don't have a cassette, but you can give me, like, a playlist or something, and then I'll just listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the easiest thing for me to do, or I can just put on, like, a thumb drive or something, because I have, like, pretty much everything they've ever done on my computer.
That's pretty cool.
But, But yeah, like, there's also a really good documentary. It's called Punk: Attitude, directed by Don Letts. And Don Letts is a guy who was very involved in the really early punk scene in the UK. I believe he was a reggae DJ. So he would just have parties either, like, in his loft or at various, like, pubs and whatnot. He would just spin reggae. And that's how a lot of punk kids back then started getting into reggae and, you know, eventually ska and a lot of stuff like that. So there was a lot of, like, integration even in that particular scene.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm glad you brought that up because people do think for some reason that only white people are into any sort of rock, which doesn't make any sense, you know? And I'm always happy to hear people who are like, oh, yeah, I'm into it, or, you know, just because it's like a lot of it incorporates music that we already listen to, whether it be jazz or, you know, hip-hop, or and then you can see the influences, like you're saying, like the exposure to reggae with punk, got a ska, and so on.
It's like you were saying about Prince, and one of the reasons why he was so controversial in the black community, it's like because he played white people music, is that how you put it?
Which is so funny because it's black people, like, started rock.
That's what I was alluding to.
It's like people forgot.
I mean, you listen to, like, almost any one of, like, Elvis's earlier songs, or, like, Jerry Lee Lewis, or even Johnny Cash. A lot of those are, like, old, like, you know, Negro spirituals that they made into rock songs, or they were...
actual songs that they just took and re-recorded.
Really sexy songs that, like, they dumbed down for white audiences and, like, you know, sold, you know, millions of records. I think that the difference between, like, American artists at the time and artists like, say, the Beatles, is the Beatles at least acknowledged where their musical taste and roots.
Exactly. It's a huge difference.
Well, Jerry Lee Lewis, I think, gave some credit when credit was due, but he was also mired in his own weird controversy, having married his cousin and whatnot. But
awkward.
Yeah. But and Johnny Cash also, to a degree, gave a lot of credit when credit was due. But yeah, Elvis, who is, I think, the king of rock and roll, he never really did. And
you know what?
That I was never aware of until I listened to Public Enemy. Like,
oh, you didn't know that?
I just, there was really no...
No talk about it.
No talk about it. And of course, we didn't really have internet. I mean, we had a very limited internet at the time.
Isn't that funny? Like, before the internet, people got away with all kinds of lies. You know? It was just like, oh, if you didn't bring it up, it didn't happen.
Yes.
You know, so
later,
it was very easy to, like, forget.
Like, you know, years later, I'm like, so that's what Chuck D was talking about. Now I get it. Like...
Exactly. But it's like, yeah, I would... Life was so different before the internet because you could say anything and people are so much more easily manipulated. If they didn't put it in your textbook, you never got to read it. You know, it was just like, what, you're going to go to the library, you're going to just like talk to all these older people. Like the knowledge was so much more local and limited and like censored, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like...
And so it's easy to imagine that people would say... Like, forget what something came from, you know? Like, it's easy to forget that rock or whatever came from black people or whatever culture. It was easy to appropriate, like, a culture because who's going to say anything, you know?
Yeah. I mean, all music is definitely rooted in people that have, like, suffered greatly. And
yeah.
And then it is, you know, profited by those who... probably didn't have it so hard and like obviously made millions of dollars off the backs of those who did suffer, and that's nothing new.
Is it something about being oppressed? Is it something about being dark and having to go into your soul that brings the creativity out, you know?
Well, art through adversity, you know?
Yeah.
I think that people who don't really suffer to a certain degree can never really, you know, gain any wisdom and truly be creative. I think people who don't end up just being, I don't know, and maybe this is mean, but like Anne Geddes just taking pictures of babies in fruit baskets, you know, like...
What is that?
Anne Geddes, you've probably seen Anne Geddes. She does all those pictures of like newborn babies, like wrapped in lettuce and shit.
I've seen like a lot of copies of it. Yeah, like, there's a lot of people who do that now. That's so funny. But they would say, you know, that's happiness. I'm just, you know, capturing a beautiful, you know, idyllic image. I know. It's really like, but people love it. They're like, oh, that's my baby. You know, like they like it. They like it. Maybe you're just, you know, maybe you just don't care. You don't like babies.
Well, I mean, no.
Maybe you hate babies.
Babies are fine. I love lettuce, too. But, like, I just can't imagine putting an Anne Geddes calendar on my wall and being able to look at myself in the mirror or take myself seriously ever again. Like, that is just...
Or you can't have any girls over either. That'd be weird.
Yeah, well, that's product. That's not art, you know?
All right. I suck. I was like, 15 minutes. Oops.
I know, I'm looking at the timer as well.
I didn't mean to hang up. I was like, oops.
Oh, no, I knew it was going to happen. Again, I'm looking rock beneath your name.
You know what? It's so cool that you're on my first call because you get to be the first. And so that means you get all, like, you know, all the bugs and stuff.
Hooray.
Yeah, but then you get to be the first. Isn't the first the best?
I mean, if there's one thing that I love more than pretty much anything, it's being a guinea pig.
Yes.
I mean, I spent, I don't know, good 6 years of my life being a guinea pig between, like, junior high and, like, mid-high school. Well, no, not even that long. I mean, that's when I was going through my weird who the hell am I phase.
But, what does that mean? I don't know if you want to go, how deep you want to go in.
Oh, no. I mean, this is, you know, it's like I was saying earlier about trying to fit in with all the other kids in the neighborhood and at school with the, you know, box fade haircut. And this is not me knocking people who have that hairdo and wore it proudly or that do it today. That's not the case. It wasn't really my bag. And it's one of those things where I respect people enough to be who they are, look how they want. I don't care. I just expect the same.
Which is a reasonable expectation. you know. Yeah.
Sure,
do you remember? Yeah, I kind of feel like that wouldn't look that good. Like, I can't really imagine you with, like, a fade or a high top or something like that.
I mean, I don't know. I thought it was...
I mean, maybe. I'll have to see some pictures.
I might have one somewhere in a scrapbook. I'll definitely have to send it to you. And then I'll burn it immediately after that. Cause I want to know.
Well, I had a Jerry curl, so don't feel so bad. I had a Jerry curl. Yeah, I totally had it. I had it with all the grease, like you couldn't lean your head against anything. Yeah, I definitely did that. I have some greasy pictures somewhere.
You know, I've only seen one or two people, in my life that had actually. Yeah, I mean, you saw it a lot, like on. You saw it in Coming to America. You saw it in, what was that movie? Hollywood Shuffle with Howard Townsend.
And everyone laughed, but everyone had it. It was like all the cool people had it, you know? It was like the thing. It was like you got, no, why it was cool. It was because it was like you didn't have to straighten your hair, but it didn't have to be nappy, so you could have that good hair. That's what it was all about. And then people would lie. People would lie and act like they didn't have a perm. Oh, no, my hair's just like this. It's like, no, it's not. They're like, it is.
Short, you know, I line up the front, round at the back. It suits me just fine. So, like, but...
Yeah. Hey, so as you know, the podcast is a science podcast. You were saying that you're not really that into science.
No, it's not that I'm not into science. It's just that I'm not scientifically educated enough to speak freely on it. Like I'm no, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm no like evolutionary biologist like Richard Dawkins. That being said, I am a firm believer in people who spend their entire lives trying to seek genuine truth through scientific study. I can speak to it fairly limitedly, but I guess the best way to put it is, if I had to choose between what do I lean towards more, science or spirituality, I would say science. I think that science is, again, it's a genuine seeking of truth, whereas religion and spirituality, in most cases, religion, they say that they already know what the truth is, and I think that's rather constricting. So,
you know, some people, science is such a broad term, like, it has, you know, like, it's a broad term, and I feel like some people consider it like a religion. Like, and it's funny because science to me is just the search for knowledge and experimentation and being able to prove, you know, seeking a proof of knowledge, I would say.
Empirical evidence and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly, yeah. And so the whole it's not real until it's observed, you know, that's pretty much, you know, the basis of science.
Yeah.
But I do find some people are so odd. Well, when I say odd, like, for instance, they say they're scientists, but they're so closed-minded. You know, some people feel like if it hasn't been proven, then it's just, you know, doesn't exist. Unless it's been approved to speak of. Like, for instance, people laugh at, like, ancient aliens and different things like that. And then there are things that are, you know, very skeptical or as far as the reality of it. But I see science as something that shouldn't be so elitist. That, 'cause a lot of things, you know, scientific research has proven this or that. And then they, you know, and then new evidence comes and then, you know, they change their findings, which is fine. You know, I just feel like it shouldn't be so... Sometimes I feel like people who claim to be scientists or science-minded are closed-minded. And some of the greatest minds in science are actually also the most controversial, you know?
Sure. I mean, but that's why science... Like you had just said, like, supposedly they have a theory, it's proven incorrectly, then they have to start from scratch, you know? And it's an unending chain until something's proven wrong. or if it's challenged, then they have to try to rehypothesize it and, you know, formulate a new theory and move forward with it. Whereas my biggest problem with religion is that, again, it claims to simply know.
And I'm not. I don't think that you can't have religion and be science minded.
I don't think that's the case either. But I think that. I mean, the uneasy marriage between like science and religion is inherently conflicting because. I mean, science does rely on empirical evidence and fact, and religion just relies on faith. I mean, that being said, like. I think that it takes pretty large leaps of faith to even come to a point where you can come up with an appropriate hypothesis and then a theory and then move forward from that. But that's a different brand of faith as well. It's not just the faith of knowing what's going to happen when you die. You know, whether you believe in, you know, Jesus or Allah or Buddha, like all these various religions just claim to absolutely know without a shadow of a doubt what's going to happen with you when you die.
Right.
I think that's a pretty bold claim considering that it's something you can't necessarily prove.
And you know, it's very, I completely agree, you know, and I used to be very religious growing up.
Ditto.
And now I'm more. I tend to lean toward, I think the term is existentialism.
Existentialism.
Existentialism?
of or pertaining to existence, yes.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. I'm not really good at saying it unless I have it in front of me to sound it out, like, phonetically.
There's tons of words that I can read very well, but I can't say them very well, so...
Me too. A lot. So I want to go into that more probably like on another show. But that's where I tend to lean towards, you know, and that gives me peace.
Well, I mean, that's also a much honest approach rather than, again, just saying whether it's from a religious or scientific approach that you just know. I mean, at least you're leaving some wiggle room for some potential enlightenment. I mean, the one thing that I've found, like, you read guys like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, those guys are like hardcore atheist scientists. Like, Dawkins is an evolutionary biologist. Sam Harris is a neuroscientist. But the difference is Sam Harris can't completely discount or completely write off the, like, a more spiritual understanding because there's so much we don't know about the human mind. That he cannot completely write off things like psychic phenomena, which might sound ridiculous to some people, but again, we don't know. There's so much untapped potential in the human mind, things that we just don't know about. And evolution is a tricky thing. It doesn't just happen overnight. So who's to say like what's going to happen thousands of years from now? But of course, I'm no expert on any of that, so I can't really speak too much to it.
You know, even though you're not an expert, and neither am I, like, I have this, you know, we have a science-themed show, but well, it's more based on getting rid of the elitism about, is that how you say that? Elitism about science. You know, I want everyday average people who may not even be very educated to want to know more and feel comfortable at least discussing it so that they can learn more, you know, instead of being afraid of science. So even though you're not well-versed, you know, us discussing it, you dropping those names, like, I'm like, actually, I'm going to go look into that now, you know?
Yeah.
So
there was one book that I, and I can't remember who the author was, but it's called A Brief History on Everything. I can probably just look it up. But it kind of goes through, A Brief History of Nearly Everything. And
I like that title.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Justin, gave it to me a number of years ago. And Bill Bryson is the author. And it's a very thorough read. I mean, it's very much for the layman. Like,
Yay, if, like me.
Yeah, like me too. Like if you happen to not be a person who is completely well versed in science, the various branches of science, it delves a lot into that. It goes a lot into various religions and how they came about to be and where they are now. It's pretty fascinating. It doesn't read like a dummy's book, but mm-hmm.
What is that series? How to Be a Scientist for Dummies? I just made that up, but you know.
Well, there's a couple of shows.
Science for Dummies? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of podcasts that I listen to. Like, one's like Stuff You Miss in History Class, another is Stuff You Should Know, and they cover a pretty broad range of topics. And then a lot of that stems from just my natural curiosity towards pretty much everything. But yeah, that book, awesome. A Short History of Nearly Everything, is pretty good. You probably get it on Amazon for like $5 or something used.
Yeah, I bet it's not. I wonder if it's on Audible. I listen to a lot of, like.
It is, right there. I'm looking at it right now.
Sweet.
Audible.
I'll use that for my next month's credit.
Bill Bryant.
You know how you get, like, one book a month?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still very much a fan of reading books, and it's sad that, like, it's very possible that in our lifetime, maybe towards the end, that there's going to be, like, no more, like, brick-and-mortar bookstores. I'm going to miss, like, just perusing the aisles and that smell of books and like judging.
You know what?
I don't think buying terrible books and things like that.
I don't think it'll ever go away. I just think they'll be more special. You know, like there's the last bookstore in LA. Like people go there as a designation. You know, so I mean, it sucks that there won't be as many, but I don't think they'll go away because people love books. Even think about it. People like to be vintage, so reading is going to fall right into that.
I mean, we still have record stores out there. I mean, they're few and far between, but, I mean, Spin and Carlback still open, Lose and Instant
Music
still
open.
So, like, I think there are definitely people that perpetually wax nostalgic about things like that. So
I was listening to SoundCloud is Stretch Armstrong and Bobito. They're like these hip hop DJs from the 90s that were super big on the East Coast.
Nice.
And they are doing this super cool series called 837 Samsung. That's a studio in New York, and they're going through all their vinyl and old cassettes. Like they had a super fan who recorded all these radio. You know how people used to listen to the radio, right, with the DJ, and they would play mixes. So this guy like had 900 cassettes, and one of the DJs like digitized the whole thing like from the 90s, and so they're playing it for like 7 weeks straight. It's awesome. I'll share it. I've shared it before, but I'm like a super fan now. So
yeah, I'd love that. I mean, a lot of the podcasts I listen to are, I lean a lot towards comedy and pop culture, but I do listen to like a lot of, I guess you could say like science and history podcasts as well. I think we're almost out of time here.
All right. So what would you say, you were mentioning your favorite podcast. Since this is science, do you have like a favorite science podcast?
I mean, the only heavily science-oriented podcast that I listen to is Star Talk Radio with Neil deGrasse Tyson. How mind-blowing is it? Like, I mean,
I love it.
Well, no,
like
we finally live in a world where I think, because like I think prior to 10 years ago, like we didn't really have a lot of academics of color. I mean, there were always people of color of influence, but
they didn't get to
remake one of the most popular miniseries of all times. What was the one that Carl Sagan did? I can't remember the name. Cosmos, which essentially which if you haven't seen all of Cosmos with Tyson, you should. It's great. It's all on Netflix. But and he's also really funny. Like, he's a funny guy, and he's incredibly down to earth for someone who's just so goddamn brilliant. So I listen to that. I listen to Sam Harris. It's a little controversial. His podcast is called Waking Up. A lot of the stuff he says about religion, I don't 100% agree with, but a lot of stuff he says about neuroscience is just heavily intriguing. And then aside from that, I listen to, like, there's one called Throwing Shade, It's not science. It's actually two comedians. Aaron Gibson.
I've seen this one.
Yeah, Aaron Gibson and Brian Safi, and they talk about gay and women's issues, and they do it in a pretty comedic way. Sometimes it's a bit much sometimes because again they're comedians. Their primary job is to entertain.
Make you laugh.
Yeah, but yeah. it dips a bit into the raunch, but it's funny.
Well, that's awesome. A lot of the funniest things are raunchy.
Yeah,
you know. There's a science one that I listen to. It's Sci-Fi Friday, so it's pretty cool. I also listen to The Guardian. They have like a science podcast as well.
Nice.
Yeah, but I'm finding more. I'm looking for more. Okay. I listen to all kinds of podcasts. My favorite podcast of all time so far is Denzel Washington is the greatest actor of all time.
Oh, it's an Earwolf podcast.
It's my favorite podcast of all
time.
Who's
the comedian that's on that?
Kamau Bell and Kevin Avery.
I almost said Gerard Carmichael. I feel bad now.
Nope. And basically, they talk about, they go through all of Denzel's films in alphabetical order, but they focus as well on, like, black artists, so black film people in the industry, and they also critique, not critique, but review the films. They're running out of Denzel Washington films, but the podcast is so popular, like they're starting to branch out because the podcast will end once Denzel Washington finally goes on the show, which is the goal. But it's like, when's that going to happen? I don't know. And it's really popular, so now they're starting to like branch out because they don't want to run out of films to talk about.
Well, I can only imagine that.
There's a lot.
There's probably a huge point of contention, especially with the movie Malcolm X, which is hands down, just one of the best movies ever made. I mean, that I've ever seen. Everything from the performances, the directing, everything. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous, and an important movie. And it was up for Best Picture. And I think it lost to, like, something really stupid, like Pretty Woman or something.
I think I was like 9 when that came out or something like that. But I remember being blown away.
Afrocentricism was really big. It's like a lot of kids wearing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you remember that?
Awesome. Like, yes.
A lot of cross colors, a lot of like.
I never got over it. Yeah.
Cute kids wearing like, you know, leather African necklaces with the actual, you know, with Africa on their chest.
That was a good time.
Yeah, it really was. And honestly, that part of the 90s really did appeal to me.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Well, it was inherently political, and I think I was always kind of into politics to some degree.
Yeah.
And social sciences to some degree. As a matter of fact, my uncle, who is kind of a douchey conservative type, got really mad at me because I recommended that, and I said it in all sincerity, that he take a sociology class. I think he took it as an insult, like I was insulting his intelligence, which I didn't say, like, hey, idiot, take a class. Like, I was just like, you know what, man, you might actually benefit from taking, you know, a sociology class, maybe a poli-sci course, because you seem to be really interested in this stuff, and it might help to broaden horizons a little bit, to interact with other people that are like-minded but might have a different perspective. And he just, you know, flipped the shit on me, so we're not really
talking
about
it. Which is crazy.
Right.
It's really crazy. I don't get people like, I don't get people who, I know that makes me very close-minded, but I don't get people who are very set in their ways. And even though I'm very set in my ways, that's what I'm saying. It makes me close-minded to not get them. But it's just like, I can at least talk, but, you know, about different ideas without shutting down and getting upset. But you know what? Once it starts getting, once people start judging and being like super biased and prejudiced and like trying to impose their I guess their culture or whatever their beliefs are onto other people as some sort of stereotype, or I just feel like I close down. And so it's hard for me to like relate with people who are very conservative or.
Well, it's like the whole thing with Trump. Like he seems to think that people of color, that the LGBT community, that they're monolithic. And by that I mean he seems to think that all black people, all Latinos, all gay, lesbian, transgender people, all bi people are all the same. And therefore, like, if he happens to cozy up to one or two of them, of each, you know, respective community, then he cozies up to all of them. He sees them all as the same entity. And, like people, like all Latinos are all the same, all black people are all the same. It's just, it's so inherently offensive. And that's a conversation I was actually having with my uncle. I'm like, I mean, he and I are proof that you know, Latinos are not monolithic. Like, we have vast differences within our community, just as there's vast differences in the black community and in the LGBT community. So trying to reduce these various communities down to, like, one single like-minded entity, like we're like a hive mind, is disgusting. And that's one of my biggest problems with him and his...
But you know what? Groupthink works. Like, there's a reason why. Propaganda is very popular. It is very powerful.
And that's why white
people
are so offensive, or offended, rather, when the subject of race comes up. They either feel like they're being blamed for it automatically, or they feel some kind of weird guilt, which I just don't understand. Like,
well, I understand the guilt, because I feel like guilt is a more honest, like, feeling than anything, but how people react to guilt is... You know, they'll either react to guilt with honesty, or they'll act to guilt with denial and anger, you know.
Like,
you know, for instance, I have, you know, there's different privileges that we have in life, and depending on where you are and your, you know, your racial or social class, whatever, you're going to be in a certain level. There's guilt associated with just being American, as far as I'm concerned, you know. And if I'm, and is it 100% like my personal fault because, you know, I have privilege being an American versus someone else? No, because I was born here, you know. But at the same time, I do acknowledge the privilege, and I do acknowledge that things should change, even if that means my lifestyle has to go down in order to make it more fair. And the thing is, that's the whole conflict. Like, people, the whole white guilt thing is, people don't want to acknowledge that they have privilege, and they don't want to give up any of it. You know?
I mean,
so if you don't want to give it up, then you've got to, some people feel like they need to have earned or deserved it. You know, so that's why,
well, that's,
you know,
that's
the whole
white male phenomenon right
there.
It's
exactly.
They still, by and large, have numerous advantages over people of color, but they, I don't know, I guess they just want to blame everyone for their own problems, and it's absurd. I mean, I didn't have a free ride with anything. I mean, I work, I go to school, I pay for school out of my own pocket, you know, like.
Right.
But the assumption is, because I am going to school, that I'm you know, a part of some, like, affirmative action program, which, again, that's not the case. I'm paying for everything out of my own pocket. And those resources are available for everyone. Anyone can get money.
Exactly.
So it has nothing to do with the fact that I have some kind of cultural advantage, which I don't. It just means that I'm willing to sacrifice certain things so that I have a better future. And I don't
want to.
And
programs.
The world owes me, and the world owes me nothing. And that's the other thing.
Right. I mean, the world owes you nothing. The world is not fair. My point I'm making is that, you know, acknowledge your privilege when you have it. And, you know, if you're all about equality, then you'd be willing to give up privilege in order for equality. If you're not, then just be honest. You're not. Like, I respect, you know, a white supremacist who's like, fuck that, we want to stay on top, da da da, over someone who's going to pretend to be all progressive, you know, and then behind your back, you know, they're in denial.
Well,
like, they don't want to.
I respect them, but I know what you're saying. Like,
yeah, when I say respect, I mean, at least
they're honest.
You know what's up, you know? Like, it's easier to defeat someone where you know when they're coming from than when someone's, like, holding all their cards, you know?
Yeah. And honestly, I probably would, at the very least, appreciate it more if people were a little more honest about their I guess their particular aversions towards other people than if they try to use coded language or dog whistle language. You know, just be who you are, man. And you know, in that way, they'll be eternally marginalized and no one will want to have anything to do with them, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the whole thing that you hear a lot of people say, I'm not racist, I have a black friend. Like,
oh yeah, that's funny.
Which is like an inherently racist thing to say. Like, if that person's true friend, why would you minimalize them like that, you know, or diminish them in such a way?
Yeah, and you know, everyone has biases and prejudice and things like that, and racism itself is a systematic thing. We're not talking about like your interpersonal relationships. It's when, you know, technically racism or racist society is referring to a structural, you know, like saying something's an apartheid or whatever. I feel like people interchange racism with prejudice, and then they get to hide behind racism by saying, I'm not prejudiced. And when you say, oh, I have a black friend, and so you're trying to say you're not racist. No, what you're really saying is, I'm not prejudiced because I have a black friend. But if you are at a higher level in your society based on your race, then you're inherently racist because you're just born that way. You know, if you go somewhere and it's only like white people who have power in that society, then that's a racist society and the white people are the racist ones. If you went somewhere and it was like black people, well, which is, if take this into consideration and pretend we're not talking about a world system, but like on a regional level, if you were to say like, okay, only black people are in power, and then they would be the racist ones if they were in power and they were imposing their, you know, their structure on, or oppressing another ethnicity or whatever. And they were in power. So that's what I'm trying to get a point across. Racism, you can only be
sure,
racist.
But that would also have to entail that there's like a system of like institutionalized racism towards white people. And that's just not
right.
That are predominantly, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying that. I'm trying to give like an example.
No, but I understand.
Yeah. We're in a world system that's ruled by white people. So, of course, that can't be the case, you know. But that's what people don't understand. So they feel like, oh, I'm not racist because I'm not prejudiced. I have a black friend or I have a Mexican friend. Da, da, da. I'm like, they're not the same thing.
No.
You know, I'm not saying you can't be one and not the other. I'm just saying that they're not the same word, you know.
Yeah.
But it's easy. I only really recently learned that myself. I interchange the word all the time until like a couple of years ago,
yeah.
You know. But that's why distinctions in the words that you use and knowing what they mean is better, because you're able to better communicate. And if you can communicate, you're able to find solutions, you know. And so you can call someone out. Hey, you might not be prejudiced, but you're racist because this is what racism means. Now they can't hide behind that word anymore, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say it was really a pleasure having you on my first show. We didn't talk that much about science, but we talked, and that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to talk because I don't want there to be any distinction between everyday life, politics, music, identity, all of that from science, because it's not a separate entity, you know, like, so.
And I would actually be very interested in hearing your thoughts on I guess so-called nerd culture and how it relates to people of color and vice versa.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about that, too. Yay!
It's not really something that people think a lot about. I think, again, it's mostly associated with white kids. At least, I don't know, whenever I see pictures of people at Comic-Con or videos of people at Comic-Con on the news or whatever, it's usually white kids. But I don't know. I think that geek culture is underrepresented when it comes to people of color.
And the thing is, I think they're there.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of acknowledgement of that. And I'm not saying that it has to cater to us. I'm not saying Superman has to be black or Batman has to be Latino. That's not what I'm talking about. But like, we grew up with all those same characters too, and I kind of feel like we've been glossed over in a lot of ways. Although there is a...
Kinda.
Yeah, there's a YouTube guy who I've only heard a couple times. He's called like the Angry Black Nerd or something like that. I'm gonna have to look him up. Yeah, I'm looking at him a little more because I want to hear his perspective on things a little more. And it actually was like these three Latino cats that did a really great evisceration of Batman v Superman, which, as you may know, is one of my least favorite movies of all time, based on two most loved characters. But yeah,
I was never into Superman. I never have been. I mean, I'm lying. I did like him when I was like young. I really did, but it was just like, I don't know, something happened and I just fell off. I think it's because I was more exposed to him in the movies versus the comic books, so it was just like it got cheesy. I didn't get the full appreciation, you know.
But that's something we can talk about. Like, I mean, we'll be here for days.
Cool, you can educate me because everyone's all about comic books, you know. Now that's like the thing, and
I'm
completely
thing.
Open I feel to like everything, but I'm definitely like not hugely. I grew up very sheltered, TV, all kinds of stuff. So it's like I often feel like I'm. Everything's new, like different pop culture things that people you like grew up with. Like I didn't grow up with that, you know.
Well, I mean, so for a while it was kind of an intimate, small thing, but I think like I don't want to say the masses like stole like nerd culture away from the nerds, but I think that it's
they're trying.
Yeah, well, no, I just think that it's a bunch of clever marketing people that flooded, you know, the everything with, you know, nerd culture. And that's cool to a degree, but I don't know. I've had some real dumb arguments about people who are, like, only into the movies and not in the comic books or vice versa. But that's a whole other ball of wax right there.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it for sure because I follow Black Girl Nerds and I follow a lot of blurbs.
Yeah.
And this is something that comes up all the time. Remember last year, Gamergate and all that stupid stuff.
Gamergate.
But yes, we'll definitely talk about that more. But I appreciate your time, and I guess we'll have to talk again.
All right.
Thanks for being my first guest.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
All right. Talk to you soon, Robert.
All right. Bye.
After my conversation with Robert, I browsed articles on the Science Daily website, looking for articles about self-identity. I found an article that I thought was interesting. It proposed that people base their self-esteem on the fulfillment of the values of their mainstream culture. These values vary depending per culture. It said that in Western Europe, in certain regions of South America, people are more likely to define their self-esteem from the impression of controlling their lives. Being free and independent. Or, on the other hand, for those living in cultures that value conformity, tradition, and security, certain parts of the Middle East, Africa, Asia, Latin America, are more likely to base their self-esteem on the feeling of doing their duty to family and or community. I don't know if that's such a bad thing. It doesn't say whether it's good or bad. It's really up to you. But it does appear that no matter how punk or rebellious you think that you are, you will implicitly base your self-esteem on your society's mainstream culture. Check out the article for yourself. It's in the description. I find that if I'm uncensored, I feel better about myself. But hey, maybe I'm delusional. What are your thoughts? Hit me up wherever you find me online. Let's have a conversation. Next week, check out episode 2. I talked to an awesome filmmaker and friend, Damien, about the Black Lives Matter movement in the UK, independent film, the Marvel X-Men saga, and his experience with science. I'm having a great time, you guys, doing the show. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.